the mercy.
Okay, meeting will come to order. Government Operations and Veterans Affairs today on March 23rd. Apologize for the confusion on the room change so late. We just heard just a few minutes before the committee was supposed to start that bonding committee wanted to use our room downstairs, and we want to encourage the bonding committee, so we were glad to move here. So a little bit crazy at the beginning, and we have a short committee time. We need to probably be done about 11:15, so we might have to move one of the things to next week if need be. We do have a quorum. Approval of minutes, Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have reviewed the minutes as usual. They are answered and correct. Approval of those minutes.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Representative Stevenson moves approval of the minutes of the March 22nd meeting. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and minutes are approved. Okay, we have three bills up today. First bill is House File 1955, Representative Gunther's bill. And Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to move House File 1955, recommend its passage and referral to Ways and Means.
It's on a regulated industry. Okay, thank you. Representative Beard has moved House File 1955, be recommended pass and be referred to regulated industries. Representative Gunther, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members, House File 1955 is a bill that simply moves siting for transmission of electric power from the EQ booth to the PUC and streamlines the process of siting of electric transmission. And this committee is basically interested in the inner workings of intergovernmental transfers, so we'll try to give you the short version. Both the EQB, the PUC, as well as the governor's office all approve this move. It will streamline the transmission process that we desperately need in light of the times that we're looking at is having potential reliability problems with our electrical grid. And if you want the short version, that's the short version. We have universal acceptance of this move.
Thank you, Representative Gunther. I know we're supposed to just look at one part of the bill. If you could point that out to us, or perhaps you could ask Mr. Shepard.
Shepard?
Okay, I guess we can look at the whole bill. You know, you've given a good overview of it. We have various handouts, members. It seems like a good chart here. PUC and EQB. We've got the bill summary. Another handout about siting decisions. Let's get some testimony here from your associate, and then we'll open up for questions. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Burl Haar. I'm the Executive Secretary for the Public Utilities Commission. I thought, if it's a pleasure, I would just go through sort of section by section here for a summary of what the bill does.
That would be great. Mr. Haar.
This is sort of in summary form. House Bill 1955 would do three things, as Representative Gunther mentioned. Transfer the authority to issue site permits for electric generating plants and wind energy conversion systems and route permits for transmission lines and pipelines from the EQB to the utilities. Secondly, it would transfer responsibility for performing any environmental reviews associated with that permitting process from the EQB to the Pollution Control Agency. And thirdly, it transfers the reliability administrator, which is currently resides in the Department of Commerce, from Commerce to the PUC. I want to emphasize that the processes involved in the permitting process, environmental review, and so on, would not be changed. We're not proposing any changes to those processes. We're just simply changing. The proposal is to change the agencies that perform those processes. The transfers are accomplished in the language of the bill mainly just by substituting terms, commission for EQB or for a chair of the board or what have you, and commissioner of the pollution control agency for EQB. So it's a sort of simple transfer of responsibility. There are, however, a few instances where that sort of simple instruction leads to confusing or unintended consequences. So those sections are singled out and spelled out in a little more detail in the language of the bill. I'll just go through section by section very briefly. Section 1 simply provides a definition of the commission, the Public Utilities Commission. Sections 2 through 4 are those contained language that I was just talking about, where there's a confusing potentially or conflicting outcome when you just spelled out the language, but nothing was changing in terms of the processes involved. Section 5 is new language. That would require the Pollution Control Agency to provide to the Commission technical expertise and other supplemental assistance on environmental issues that are involved in these permitting matters before the Commission. And it also allows the Commission to recover the agency's, the PCA's, costs for its services through an assessment process that's already in Chapter 116C. Sections 6 through 8, again, are those, you know, examples of cases where we have to modify the languages to avoid confusing or unintended outcomes. Sections 9 and 10 relate to the assessment process. They would simplify the recovery for the permitting process, cost recovery for the permitting process. Proposed language would basically allow the regulatory agencies to recover necessary and reasonable costs stemming from these proceedings. And it really replaces a rather complex, unnecessarily complex language that's been in the statute for some time. And as I understand it, makes it consistent with some rules that are already in place in elsewhere in the EPB rules. Section 11 requires the Commission to hold a joint hearing on need issues and site and route issues, rather than having separate hearings for those, because it's presently the case. Unless the Commission finds that, for whatever reason, it isn't necessary, or it isn't more efficient, or not in the public interest to have a joint hearing. But generally, the default would be have a joint hearing on both need and site issues. Section 12 brings the statutory deadline for need determination into alignment with the time period, statutory time period for the environmental review. Currently, environmental review is allowed 12 months. The need is 6 months. And in many cases, on simple projects, that 6 months is not a problem meeting, but on the larger projects, it is. And we thought it would make sense to have them together and running it on the same sort of time frame. Section 18 transfers the liability administrator from Commerce to CUC. Section 14 invokes Chapter 15.039, which is the provision in the statute that governs transfer of resources from when there's a transfer from one agency to another. The language in that section of the statute determines how that is to take place and what's to govern that process. And that Section 14 invokes that section for the transfer of the siting and routing authority. Section 15 does it for the transfer of the liability administrator. 16 is the instructions to the revisor simply for the substitution of the agency names that I mentioned earlier. It's sort of the general instructions to the revisor's office, and Chapter 17 is the effective date of Law 1.
Thank you, Mr. Heyer. Questions from members? I have a question, Mr. Heyer. Maybe this is to Mr. Shepherd. I know the Pollution Control Agency is going to be changing its name, I think, effective date July 1st, August 1st this summer, and I've seen that in another bill. That's just something that will naturally occur throughout statute once that other bill goes through. Mr. Shepherd, how does that work as it relates to this one?
Madam Chair and members, if the two bills both pass, then the revisor would probably make the instruction in all of the statutes and it would apply to this bill as well. I'm not familiar with the other bill, but I assume it could be consistent with this one, and then the revisor would just make the changes.
Thank you. Questions from members? Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gunther or Mr. Hart. So just to be clear, the PUC now will be doing the siting and also the environmental process. So we're still going to have a complete environmental process. And the employees who work for EQB or the staff people who work there are still going to be involved in this process. and they'll be members of ECA.
Mr. Hart.
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, yes, the environmental review, as I mentioned, the environmental review process is not changed by this. The same requirements are in place. That will be part of a unified joint process now, which looks at need and siting around locational issues. And the employees will be, presumably, those folks with the experience will go, with it. Some will go to CCA, and we would hope that some would also come to the commission for the permitting part of it, but how exactly that's going to be done, maybe we haven't spelled that out.
Follow-up, Representative Beard?
In a moment, perhaps.
Okay, next up, Representative Sheldon Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Burl Haar.
I was looking at the Department of Commerce information sheet here where it talks about the commission, I assume that's the state commission, being shielded from dealing with landowner impact, that being a problem with the current process. How will that be addressed then with this new proposal?
Currently the need process is done by the commission that looks at size, type, and timing of facilities. We don't look at locational issues because quite often there's not a specific site or route that's being proposed in the need process. It's just sort of the idea of the facility. Is it needed? And is it in your interest? Locational issues are part of the siting and routing process, which is currently at the UQB. And so there's a separation, and we've experienced in, for example, public hearings on need issues. People come forward and have questions about locational issues. You know, how is this going to affect my land, or how is this going to affect our community, and so on. And you say, well, you know, we're not really looking at that. That's not part of what the commission is currently doing. We're looking at the need for the facility. Locational issues are done by the EQB, and that leads to confusion. And the hope is that by joining these processes and having all of those issues in one process, that the public will have an opportunity to have greater impact and greater. And it'll be clearer to the public how this process is going to work. And that's one of the issues, one of the factors motivating our desire to pass this bill.
Follow up, Representative Johnson.
So then, would the landowners be speaking directly to the PUC then, or how does that actually work?
Mr. Hart.
Mr. Chair, they can certainly have an opportunity to submit evidence and to make comment to this public utilities commission through a hearing process. That's right, sir.
Okay, next up is Representative Khan. Happy birthday, Representative Khan.
Members, make sure you get birthday cake. But anyway, Madam Chair, Mr. Hart, I get really nervous when we talk about environmental things and streamlining and more efficiency and something like that. And one of the things that I do know the difference between the PUC and the EQB is that the EQB was structured to have a wide variety from the kinds of people who would have different interests in the environment, like DOT and health and CCA and and citizen members. And is there any objection to this bill, for example, from the environmental is there any process that's open to the that was open in the E2B process which isn't open in the PUC process?
Representative Khan, I think the process is still intact. I think the EQB has had two hearings and both approve of this thing. The process we're going through, I have no one has approached me yet as the author of the bill with any concerns.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Edward Garvey, Deputy Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce for Energy and Telecommunications. Representative Khan, your question was actually one that we in the administration, working with the Public Utilities Commission and other stakeholders, thought very long and hard about, which is exactly why we wanted to make sure that the EQB siting staff moved to the Pollution Control Agency to preserve the environmental protection integrity of that decision-making process. And that's actually one of the specific reasons why that staff wing is being supposed to go there for that very reason.
Representative Khan?
Okay.
Representative Beard, did you want us to come back to you?
No, thanks, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any other questions from members? Is there anybody from the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? Okay. There is an A1 amendment, and I understand it's a clarification. Chair will move the A1 amendment. And Mr. Shepherd, perhaps you could tell us more about this. Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair and members, this was an amendment. The bill currently provides on page 5 that certain fees are going to be set by rule. I assume that if the drafters of the bill wanted the fees set by rule, they wouldn't want to then have to come back to the legislature and have the legislature approve them after the rules were done. And this makes that happen. There's an existing law that requires fees to be approved by the legislature, and this would have an exemption from that, so they could just be set by rule.
Madam Chairman, as usual, Mr. Shepherd is way ahead of us, and we certainly appreciate that amendment.
Okay, any questions on the A1 amendment? Representative,
just to be clear, Mr. Shepherd, then, if the commission sets this by their rulemaking, we ultimately do have some authority over that as we have to.
Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair and Representative Beard, the legislature could always come back and pass a new law that would override the rule, but the legislature would not have to approve the fee before it took effect under this amendment.
Are there questions on the A1 amendment? All in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion to approve the amendment is adopted. Okay. Any questions to House File 1955 as amended? Seeing none, Representative Gunther, we'll give you the final word before we vote on your bill. Representative Gunther.
Well, I appreciate the time the committee has had in hearing this bill. I think it's very necessary, especially in light of the transmission bills that are being heard and regulated in the industry. I think it's very appropriate to have this passed.
Thank you. Representative Beard renews his motion that House File 1955, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Regulated Industries Committee. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. And House File 1955 goes to Regulated Industries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gunther. Next up is Representative Joe Forrest. House File 1802.
Hey, good morning. Madam Chair, I'd like this bill to be re-referred to Chairman Seifert's Committee on State Government Finance, please.
Okay. Chair will move that House File 1802 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the State Government Finance Committee. Representative DeForest, welcome to committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning. I believe this is my maiden voyage before the GovOps Committee, but since I'm in my second term, no treat, so I'm glad Representative Kahn has provided them today. Madam Chair and members, what you have before you this morning is the Contract Ratifications Bill, which ratifies the various collective bargaining agreements, binding arbitration awards, and other compensation adjustments which were approved by the Subcommittee on Employee Relations during the legislative interim. In the interest of time and the fact that the bill itself, the text is fairly straightforward, I will not take the time to read this. However, I do have Mr. Greg Kubinger from the Subcommittee on Employee Relations with me here this morning, should you have any detailed questions about particular collective bargaining agreements or arbitration awards which we approved during the interim.
Thank you. Let's get some words from each testifier. Mr. Hibinger, welcome to the committee, and just please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Greg Hibinger with the LCC Subcommittee on Employee Relations. As Representative De La Force indicated, this bill would ratify a number of contracts and plans that were approved during the interim by the subcommittee. Most contracts and plans for the current biennium were approved and ratified by the legislature in the 04 session, but there were a number of contracts that weren't negotiated yet, and they were negotiated and arbitrated during the last interim, and those are the contracts and plans that are included in this bill. All of the contract and arbitration awards are consistent with those that were ratified and negotiated during the 04 session. There's a tracking sheet at the, I believe there's a summary, a multi-page summary that was provided to you. The second to the last page summarizes the cost of the contracts and plans. These contracts in this bill are consistent with those that were negotiated earlier.
Okay, thank you. Questions from members? Representative Horton, you served on this committee here. I see there's, what, 5 House members, 5 Senate members. This is the first time we've had this information before our committee, so maybe you can tell us a little bit about the commission. Representative Horton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Joint Subcommittee on Employee Relations has the primary mission of offering interim approval, as Mr. Huben here mentioned, for collective bargaining agreements and such, in recognizing the simple interest that once a collective bargaining agreement, for example, is ratified between the parties, the exclusive representative and the Department of Employee Relations, recognize it's in the state's best public policy to get these contracts put into effect. So simply what we are primarily is an interim ratification body. The Joint Subcommittee on Employee Relations is made up of 5 members of the state Senate, 3 members from the DFL, 2 from the Republican Party, and the mirror of that is true for the House. We have 3 Republican members from the House and 2 DFL members from the House as well. Control of the chair of that committee rotates between the Senate and the House. I am the chief author of this bill because I will be the incoming chairman of the Subcommittee on Employee Relations for this coming biennium. I'd be happy to entertain any other questions with respect to how the subcommittee works, should members have any.
Questions from members? Representative Searson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, I just wanted to ask, in terms of structure, are these 2-year contracts then that are being bid out on this particular process?
Representative Horst.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Severson. Yes, that's correct. Mr. Huebinger may want to elaborate, but essentially the terms of the contract are defined in statute. Chapter 179A is the Minnesota Public Employment Labor Relations Act, which sets out, in many terms, the parameters that both labor and management work under.
Mr. Huebinger, if you could elaborate a bit.
Madam Chair and Representative Severson, I would only add that the that PELRA is fairly general in nature, and it just provides contracts to state employees can be no more than 3 years in length. But the pattern has been since the statute was codified in 1981 that the contracts followed on a state biennium.
Thank you, and then Representative Ford. So when they go into negotiations, the negotiations are ratified by the membership, or is it by an executive board, or how is that contract ratified?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Severson. That depends primarily, if we're talking about the union, the exclusive representative, they do have their own particular bylaws regarding ratification on the union side of the agreement. But generally what happens is the negotiating team will take an offer back to their executive board with a recommendation from the bargaining team to say, we like this, we don't like this, or we're neutral about it. Then you have the executive board of a particular union vote to send it on to their membership for ratification or not. But generally what happens is ultimately the rank and file of the particular union vote whether or not they want to ratify the contract. And then what you have is you have an agreement primarily between the Department of Employee Relations representing management and the union, which then gets sent, depending upon when it's ratified, but then it gets sent to the subcommittee for our approval and then gets sent on to the full legislature for approval.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Questions from members? Anybody from the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? I don't see any amendments. Okay. Chairman, use the motion. Whoops, let's let Representative De La Force have a final word here before we vote on your bill.
Madam Chair, this is anybody who's been around for a period of time knows that this is sort of an annual right to ratify these contracts, and so I don't see anything real controversial or out of the ordinary with respect to this House file.
Thank you. Chair News motion that House File 1802 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the State Government Finance Committee. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed? And go to the State Government Finance.
Thank you,
congratulations,
members. Happy Easter.
Thank you. Next up is Representative Beard. And this is House File 913. Representative Beard, would you like to move your bill? And I see we have an engrossed version. Yeah, could you tell us about it? Let's move it first. And Representative Beard.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, it's laid over. Do we need to unlay it?
Or I guess that's how I need it. Right back up. Okay. Where would it go to?
I believe it's going to the General Register.
Okay.
I could try for consent, but that would be overreaching, I think.
Tell us about why we have a different version here, the UE1.
Madam Chair and members, we have, remember in the fascinating and thorough discussion we had here a couple of weeks ago, there were at least two, maybe several is a good word, amendments that were offered that were accepted or incorporated into the original draft of the bill. So Mr. Shepherd has been so good as to have an unofficial engrossment number one, which incorporates the amendments that were made in that previous discussion. So that's what that's about. Hopefully we don't have to plow the whole bill again. I know I've had, I laid it over for one reason in particular, and that was Article number 5. And I've spoken with most of you and come to a consensus amendment, which is being passed out now, consensus in my opinion, and hopefully in yours as well.
Excuse me, maybe if you could go through the first four sections.
Certainly.
That would be great.
I'll start with, while I'm passing this out, the first section of the bill deals with contracts governing our state employee group insurance plan, that the department would like to strike references to certain types of carriers that, because of changes in the marketplace and the way we work our self-insured plan, actually kind of get in the way, in the department's opinion, of entering into contracts with other parties that administer the plan. And so that is legislation that they need to make that happen, or to make what they're doing actually a lawful thing. Section 2, it strikes language relating to insurance for legislators, and the stricken language currently provides the change in the benefits result in increasing, resulting in increased costs to the state shall not take effect until the expiration of the term of the members of the existing House of Representatives, and strikes language relating to an early retirement incentive that were offered to employees in 1982. That's way past, folks, so I suppose we can delete that language. Number 3 deals with retired employees. I think was number 3 the one that dealt with judges and whatnot? Section 3, retired employees. Oh, now this is the ability of employees to, page 5 and 6. And their ability to continue to purchase insurance. At some point here, there was a discussion, too, about the ability for the Retired Employees Association to buy a cheaper plan. Remember that discussion? Apparently, state law requires that we offer them a gold-plated Cadillac version. And a lot of the and state employees, the people in the State Employee Association, Retired Employee Association, have other coverage, apparently through Medicare, and thought that a cheaper version would be more than sufficient and leave a little more discretionary money in their pocket. But actually, for the commissioner to accommodate their wishes, we needed this change in law. I think that's on page 6, line 18. Now, Madam Chair, is the amendment passed out, and could I have a copy? The A11 amendment that we've, so many of us have worked on.
Excuse me, Representative Beard. Representative Mahoney, I know you have a question. I don't know if it's to one of the first four sections of the bill, or is it to the amendment?
I'm hiding for you.
Okay. We'll come back to you.
If you'd like that, if I could stand for questions on those parts. I will make one other comment regarding Section 1. I know a couple members have some questions about whether this is too oriented towards a buyer's market without looking at the consumer version, or consumer's concerns. I don't share that concern, but I'm sensitive to the fact that others do. Members, if I can ask you for this, as I've demonstrated hopefully to this point, I know that this bill is a work in process. There is a Senate companion that is parked in Senator Higgins' office, and they're kind of waiting for us to see what we do here. And if it's okay with the will of this committee, I would ask you to pass this bill, and we'll park it on the General Register, and then we'll go have a chat with Senator Higgins and see if we can't address those concerns in the Senate version and work it out in conference committee. That's my word to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Beard. And let's take questions on the first four sections before we get to the amendment.
I noticed that Ms. Holding is here, Madam Chair. If we need to have expert witness from the department, she is available.
Do you want to bring her up here to talk about anything in the first four sections?
Sure. If there are questions, we'd be happy to. Or Ms. Holding?
Ms. Holding?
Join me at the DR.
So we'll take questions on the first four sections first. Ms. Holding, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Liz Holding, Director of the Employee Insurance Division at the Department of Employee Relations.
Welcome. Did you want to make any comments or just be available for questions? Ms. Holding.
Madam Chair, one additional comment to what Representative Beard has said. Yes, we will be looking into some additional concerns that were brought to our attention regarding the first section and dealing with the carriers and not having employees lose any of the protections provided by sections in the law.
Questions from members? Representative Searson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Pierre, currently under the Employee Relations Act, do contracts for separate entities get negotiated as separate entities, or are they negotiated as a group? And I guess the question I'm getting to is, must offer one lower plan. Would that take into the second part of the question, would that take into account something in the concept of health savings account?
You're referring to page 6.
That's
on the ground with between lines 12 and line 15. Ms. Holding? Do you understand the question?
I apologize.
I'm not sure I follow.
Representative Hewson.
I could be wrong in how I'm understanding this, but I'm understanding that the retirement fund negotiates on health care benefits for the retirees in association with health care costs. And I think that's what this was initially addressing, is the cost of ex-legislators as they go out the door, not having access to come back and then get off again. Am I in the right bill here?
No, you're not.
Okay. No. Then I would draw my question.
Thank you very much.
That was another thing.
Yes, Representative Laughlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for being willing to follow through on some issues. When we first took up the bill, there was some confusion about the first part of the bill, and it hasn't gotten clarified yet. So we're going to let the process go forward, but I think there are some issues related to going to self-insurance plan. But I had another question in that the state has proposed or discussed going into joint purchasing with the Buyer's Healthcare Action Group. Is that, I didn't see anything language here that authorizes sort of a joint effort. Is that going through a different initiative or?
Madam Chair, perhaps Representative Liebling, perhaps I'll let Ms. Holding answer.
We're commonly mistake, but we're trying to have separate identities.
Ms. Holding.
Not hard enough, though.
To Representative Loughler's question.
No.
Madam Chair, Representative, we feel what we're attempting to do here is to give us the flexibility we need to purchase benefits for state employees. And if that's accomplished with the language that we are, you know, submitting here, we think that we'll be able to do whatever's directed in our way for the future. Right now, we're licensed, we're required to purchase from licensed carriers, and anything beyond that would certainly be not allowed by law. So we're hopeful that this is giving us the flexibility we need for any new opportunities that arise.
Follow up, Representative Hoffer.
Yeah, well, my question is more whether or not we needed to. There needed to be a separate authority for us to join a joint purchasing pool. I understand the increased flexibility on here, but there was a time talking about merging public and private purchasing together, and I didn't see that addressed in here, and I just wondered if that's going to be handled in a different piece of legislation or whether it wouldn't even come before the legislature.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, actually, you had called me Representative Demmer. That's
all right. Now we're even. I'm
terribly I know where I would speak because there's been some talk about that from some of the governor's initiatives about packaging our buying power with other companies' buying powers and maybe have a joint public-private partnership to negotiate better rates and terms. Frankly, I don't know. As the bill was described to me in my office by department officials, that wasn't part of the discussion here. So it can be added later, a separate bill. I don't know for sure that it is here, and I don't know if Ms. Holman has any further information to share on that.
Ms. Holman. Well,
Madam Chair, Representative, I do know that several years ago we were looking at the model of the Buyers Healthcare Action Group. But we are unique. We are the state, and so there were differences that we couldn't agree to, and so we never pursued it any further. If that's what you're referring to, we have no intention at this point that I'm aware of going in any direction other than where we are right now.
Okay. I think we're ready for the amendment, and then Representative Mahoney, I know you have questions. Representative Beard, would you like to move the A11 amendment?
Madam Chair, members, I would like to move the A11 amendment this time and explain for a moment and stand for questions if necessary.
Representative Beard.
Excuse me, members, you'll remember the fascinating discussion last time when the department brought this to our attention. And as we've had some time to contemplate the expectations of former legislators and the different things that are involved in legislative service in the middle of our lives and careers here, it struck many of us a very reasonable thing to include this benefit for folks who have put so much out for public service. Some of the concerns, though, that some of us had about the in and out month at a time provision have been addressed in the amendment that colleagues from both sides of the aisle and colleagues currently serving and colleagues who are retired or former had a lot of input. I was a very popular legislator there for a couple of weeks. A lot of chocolate came to my office. I appreciate it very much. But this has been, with particularly Representative Mahoney's help, this has been the what we asked Mr. Shepard to draft for us. I may, as it moves through the Senate, make suggestions that we simplify it a little bit. What this does is it puts the onus, if you will, on the Legislative Coordinating Commission to keep track of us as we move on to our other lives from this place after our service here and forward that mailing list to the Department of Employee Relations to contact every member each year before the open enrollment season. Basically, members can still opt into the plan any time and as many times during their careers after life here as they wish, but they must come in during open enrollment and leave during open enrollment. There's a penalty that if they default on that and leave after a couple of months, they lose the benefit entirely. And that will be explained clearly to everybody who does re-enroll. Part of the thing, though, that we may be overreaching a bit, and I would ask us to consider if we come back from conference with this and this provision is here, is that perhaps we drop the requirement that the LCC have to notify everybody every year, and we just wait for them to find us, and we explain it to them at that time. And we don't exclude anybody because they hadn't gotten any notification before. So I think the spirit of what we're trying to do with this amendment is here. But at this time, members, I'd ask that you pass the amendment as it's written, and let us take this up in our discussions with our colleagues in the other house. And I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Representative Mahoney.
Okay.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Beard. I guess my question is, what does this do to the problem that was discussed before of having people, want to join in because they're ill? And I wonder, does limiting this to the open enrollment periods really put a damper on that problem? Because, frankly, that troubles me that former legislators have the ability to to sort of, I guess, what I would call game the system in that way. And does this, in your mind, kind of put a sufficient limit on that?
Madam Chair, to that point?
Representative Lee.
Committee members, Representative Lee. Assistant Commissioner Holman. I am absolutely infuriated at your department. You cannot imagine how upset I am. After you testified to this committee that legislators were doing that, in 2 days, I put staff on trying to find a legislator, a senator, or a representative that had ever done what you described. And not one has been found. They have to come through House Administrative Services and its counterpart in the Senate to get enrolled back into our health care plan. And not one has ever done it in the fashion that you talked about. I won't tell you what I think of what you did here. I'll just let the committee understand.
Madam Chair, at that point, if I may.
Representative
Beard. Whether or not this actually happened, or it's possible, with the given the HIPAA Act, which is pretty onerous stuff, that it's possible to find that, I don't know. I know that some have been looking for instances. We hear anecdotal stories, but we can't find documentation. Nonetheless, the process is open. Could have. But that it appears there for public view and consideration is something that some of us thought merited some sort of tightening up to come back into compliance with the spirit of the whole concept of insurance, that we share our risk and we do so over a period of time when we're healthy, not just when we're not healthy. So to Representative Liebling's question, I'm satisfied, I would say to my colleague, that this brings some sort of form and process to what appeared to be kind of an open process. To the extent that people could schedule their illnesses or times of unhealthiness around the open enrollment period, well, I suppose that could happen, but I don't think it's going to. But at least everybody's playing with the same entrance and exit rules as everybody else in the state employee group plan. So I think this is a well thought out and a well intentioned bringing some sort of form to a problem that was pointed out to us that may or may not be a problem, but certainly there's a perception thing here. So,
Ms. Holden, I want to give you an opportunity to respond to Representative Mahoney.
Ms. Holden. Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, we do have records that have been given, reviewed by the commissioner, that indicate that we have, as I think I testified, three or four individuals who have come and gone from the program.
So I guess, Madam Chair, this isn't a huge mountain of a problem that's there. But given our love and respect for the institution and the integrity and reputation of this place, I think this is a modest step that is very defensible, at least from this legislative perspective. If this ever comes up in my district, I'd be proud to defend this, the benefit and the strictures that we've placed on it. So with that, I conclude my remarks and ask, now if you have to stand for any further questions or comments.
And we do need to get out of the room here in about, well, less than 10 minutes. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Beard, I appreciate that. I just want to follow up to my previous question and just ask, so, you know, I don't know a lot about how this works, but so this is, this opting in and out during the open enrollment periods is the same kind of option that's available to all state employees and to retired employees as well? What's the difference here between what legislators are getting and what every other employee gets?
Representative.
Madam Chair, I think the I think there's a large difference because I think the employees that retire and move on from here don't have the benefit of calling up House Services or the administration and re-enrolling at some point until they're actually retired employees in a previous issue that we addressed in another article. Perhaps Ms. Holden can talk about the eligibility or lack thereof.
Ms. Holden.
Chair, Representative. Employees, when they leave, are given 30 days to sign up for COBRA coverage. and once they're out, then they're out, then cannot come back. So this coverage would be different than any other coverage.
Okay, to the A11 amendment. Further questions? Is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify for or against this bill? Okay. Let's first vote on the AM-11 amendment, and then we'll vote on the whole bill. To Representative Beard's A-11 amendment, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, and amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative Beard, to your bill as amended.
Well, Madam Chair, not so much the bill, just for the process of presenting it, engaging in a fascinating, extensive, and thoughtful debate. It's been an honor to be the catalyst that allowed that to happen here. To those that helped me with this A11 amendment, I appreciate the honor to present the place and the integrity of people's word as we try to craft something that's reasonable, that's good, and we pull the word off the box full of spiders, if you will. I think we've done the best with the situation. Thanks for your help. I really appreciate it. I appreciate passing this bill to the General Register. I'm happy to
see it.
This actually has some fiscal impact. Should it not go to Representative Cypress Committee?
I know we talked about this before. Representative Beard.
Yeah, we did. I think the impact would be the same or not much different than it is at the current moment, Madam Chair and Representative Mahoney. If you're speaking about the insurance provisions in Article 5 that we just passed, the 11th Amendment. So it's happening now that we put some form and structure to how it happens. I don't see it being a big difference.
Representative Seckert.
Madam Chair, this is talking with Representative Conn about this. It has apparently a small effect on the insurance rule for that view, correct?
Ms. Holman.
I'm not opposed to having it go to my committee. I don't want it to go there for the sake of going in, but if anybody wants it to, we'd be happy to look it over and so forth.
Ms. Holman.
Madam Chair, Representative. Certainly if people are coming and going from the program, we are paying any benefits that would arise as a result of their participation in the program. Or if they're not there, likewise, we wouldn't pay for it because we're a self-insured program. So the impact, they have been coming and going and we have been paying for them. If they come during open enrollment, come into the program, we would pay for those losses. So I don't see that there would be a material difference in the cost of the program.
Madam Chair, the point was brought up in this other committee that people are going in and out and costing $100,000 here or there. And I understand it's not general fund and so forth, but I guess I don't want to precedent that if there's something that has some fiscal impact, just certify my committee either. And I know Representative Beard has a preference, but I could hear it next week. I mean, it's not a big issue for me either way. Representative Conn has way more, since she's the chair of my committee, has way more experience with this than I do. But
I'm just looking at what kind of information could be presented before the committee, and I don't know if it's any more than the waving of the hands that we're having here, plus the fact that it's clearly not a negative fiscal impact. It's clearly not going to cost more than it is now, and it's not a budgeted amount anyway. So I don't care whether you want it or not. I just don't know what you're going to do with it.
Madam Chair, perhaps brownies or cupcakes. The will of the committee is fine with me.
Representative Beard, I would be more comfortable having to go to state government finance if like you change your motion.
I'd be happy to
do that.
Madam Chair, I think if it's a close call, why don't we have it go there? And we're not going to shelve it or anything. We'll give it due consideration.
So Representative Beard moves that House File 913 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to State Government Finance. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the bill is going to State Government Finance. Thank you. Members, before we adjourn, please check the website. Our next meeting will be Wednesday during our regular committee time. We handed out a list yesterday of all the meetings that we'll have through April 12th. As you know, next week will be busy with first deadline coming up. We have various military bills coming, something from the Board of Investments, state-owned vehicles, competitive bidding, state agency leasing, all types of things. Anybody from the committee who has a bill that hasn't been heard yet that needs to be heard in this committee, please let me know. We have priority to member bills. And so with that, the meeting is adjourned.